Welcome to the Paranormal Pendle Podcast, coming to you from the heart of Pendle Witch Country in the northwest of England. My name is Craig Bryant, author, investigator and collector of stories. Join me as we take a journey into the paranormal, UFO sightings, cryptozoology and big cats. This is the Paranormal Pendle Podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 47 of Paranormal Pendle, broadcasting to the Paranormal UK network at pauk.radio.com. So for this episode, I'm absolutely delighted that I've got a guest coming on who I've been trying to get on for months and months. It's Elaine Sugden-Kelly from the fantastically named Spectre Detectors from up in the northeast of England. Elaine, thank you for coming on. We finally get to talk.
I know. Thank you for having me. It's taken a bit of organising, but, you know, these things are worth waiting for.
It has indeed, yeah. We've both had bouts of ill health, I think.
Everything.
Lost voices and colds and coughs and all sorts of stuff. So,
we have.
But it's absolutely great to have you on. So for people who don't know about Spectre Detectors, when did all this begin for you? When did you first get involved in paranormal investigation?
Well, we started in 2011, so quite some time ago now, but our 13th year. I can bore you with how it began. It's quite bizarre, as everything to do with the paranormal is.
I'm sure it wouldn't be boring, so I'd love to know.
Well, I started working at a supermarket, and I started doing night shift. And I didn't know that the supermarket that I started working with had its own little ghost. So we were working night shift, and Bev, who's part of the team, we worked together one night. We both worked the same department, and we both experienced the spirit of a man.
Okay.
And the man wore a boiler suit, and we would see him out the corner of our eye, and we would hear him, and then there was a lady spirit as well, and she would clink the coat hangers like she was looking for a size, and she would swear the necklaces.
Oh, okay.
And the whole of the store knew that the shop was haunted because toilet rolls would fly off the shelves and things would be seen on CCTV. So that's actually what got us started. We knew that we'd experienced it, but we wanted to capture something on film. You know how you all get that idea that it's you're going to be the one to prove that ghosts exist and you're going to catch it on film and you're going to do this, that and the other, as if it's that easy. So we decided one night to Google one of the most haunted buildings where we live, the northeast of England, and it was a community centre not too far from us, a couple of miles, called Mainsforth Community Centre, and we hired that. And a small group of us went that night, and we went with not much. I had a camcorder. I bought a K2 meter for, you know, just to make it look like it does on the telly. And we had a voice recorder. We actually caught a man moaning on the recordings, and it was literally 10 seconds long, if that.
Right.
But it was enough to get us hooked. So that was how it began. And the reason that I picked Spectre Detectors was the guy who took the booking for our investigation said, well, you'll have to give me a group name. And I had to come up with something off the top of my head. And that's where I got Spectre Detectors from. Don't know where I got it from, but there you go. I just thought it rolled off the tongue.
Yeah, brilliant.
There you are.
It's one of the better names, I must admit. It certainly does roll off the tongue. So before you started working in the shop then, did you believe in ghosts at all? Or you did? I did.
Like most people, our family is a little bit strange, but because I'm 50 this year, you didn't talk about things when you were younger. You know, if you saw a ghost, you didn't tell people. It wasn't, you know, because it's trendy and everybody knows about it now. Back then you didn't, you'd be sectioned. So when I was little, I used to see spirit. Most of my family did. My sister see spirit. My mum and dad used to see spirit. But we never talked about it. And then when I hit my teenage years, I went to a spiritualist church with a friend, and it was a night of transmediumship. And I just thought, you know what, this really isn't for me. Probably the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. Now I love things like that. But as a teenager, I thought, they're all nuts. This is really bizarre that people are coming out with other people's voices and you know, this, that, and the other. And then I just thought, no, it's not for me. And it all kind of left me then. Mm. It left me until I started working at the supermarket in my 30s, and it came back with a vengeance. But I don't know whether it's because when I was younger, I wasn't mature enough to handle it. Mm. So obviously when you get older, you can. So then I went back to spiritualist churches and did development classes and mediumship and learned how to switch things on and switch things off and just got a better understanding. So I'm not saying I'm a medium. I don't go on giving readings or anything like that. For all, I love it, and I love tarot cards and stuff like that. I save any gift that I have now for investigations.
Yeah.
I might pick something up, but it's not someone's gram or whatever.
Yeah.
It tends to be linked with the building.
Yeah.
There's no pressure then, you know, because if you're giving a reading to somebody, they want to know everything, and you have to be good, and you can't say, I've got an old lady that baked corned beef pies, because half of the Northeast had a gran that baked corned beef pies. Whereas when you go on an investigation, you pick something up, and then when you find that, you look at the history and, you know, newspaper archives and things like that, and you find that person, that's so, it's such a buzz.
Yeah,
that you've got that. Mm. I mean, I'm going ahead of myself, and we'll talk about this later, but I went on an investigation on Sunday night, and you'll never believe who came through there. But again, that's another story. It's just mind-blowing.
You can't tease me with that and then move on. You've got to tell me what that's all about.
Right, well, on Sunday night, we investigated an old munitions factory. And it is now a trampoline and climbing place for kids, and it's called ROF 59.
Okay.
And the reason it's called ROF 59 is that it's Royal Ordnance Factory 59. Oh. It's where the Aycliffe Angels used to fill shells for bombs in the war.
Right.
And that's where it is. So we've been a few times. We're luckily they only allow us, as far as I know, because they know that we're respectful. And there's a fine line between people's nanas who died in an ammunition factory. Mm. You've got to be respectful. You don't go stirring up things and trying to get evidence in that kind of way.
No.
I am very respectful. I've got family that work there.
Mm.
And we do things like playing music and trying to get them to communicate through music. And we play Gracie Fields and Vera Lynn and, you know, all of them nice things.
Yeah.
And we were investigating on Sunday night, and we got Edith Piaf.
Oh.
You know Edith Piaf, the French singer?
Yes.
That's who came through.
Good grief. She has
nothing to do with Newton Aycliffe, and she has nothing to do with that factory. So why on earth we had Edith Piaf? And we were doing automatic writing with a planchette, and she even signed a name, and I've compared her signature. It's just...
Well, yeah, I'm absolutely gobsmacked by that. So how did you feel when the name came through?
Well, we were in the room, and I just, again, the whole mediumship thing, and I said, do you know what? I keep getting this song in my head, and it was that, you know, No Regret. I won't sing it to you because I'm not very good at singing in French. And it was that song. So I looked it up on YouTube, and I played it. And then we started doing table tipping, and the table started dancing, and I asked, because you've got to... We ask three times because a really good medium assured me that if you've got a question, you ask it three times, because on the third, they can't lie to you.
Right.
They can pretend to be people, but on the third, they have to be honest.
Mm.
And I asked it three times, and it said it was. Then when I looked through the photographs with full spectrum camera, we've caught a lady, and I've compared her picture, and it looks awfully close to me. And then people were doing the automatic writing, and we watched it, right, Edith, and then Piaf. It was just, I don't even know what they would be doing there.
No, sorry, I was just going to say, the signature, have you managed to find her signature online? And
I have, yes. I've Googled it, and I've compared ours with theirs. It's on the page, I can send you it if you like. Mm. And it's just, I mean, it's not exact, because it's never going to be exact.
No.
It's automatic writing.
But it's very, very close. How did you feel at this point?
Well, I'm always blown away by anything that spirit give us anyway. Mm. I mean, it's always great when somebody comes through who's famous, but I just couldn't work out in my head why she chose to come through that night to us. it's not even as if we were thinking about, you know, because you might think of Winston Churchill or Vera Lynn, because they did visit that factory. Yeah. Gracie Fields visited that factory. Queen Elizabeth visited. King George V. Not Edith Piaf. That's
random. Were you playing some of her music?
When I got that song in my head, I played it. I looked it up and I played it. And that's when the table started dancing. And then I played another one of hers. I think it was Milord. And she's got another one, Livy and Rose, isn't it? I played all of them just because the energy was so electric. Mm. We were kind of, the table was spinning as we were playing it. But again, I just couldn't work out why. And I'm sure if somebody knows anything to do with Edith Piaf, they might let me know if she does have any links anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Either drop me a line and I'll pass it on, or if you want to give us your contact details later on at the end of the podcast, then I'm sure people can contact you direct if they know anything about it. There must be some sort of historical link. You'd have thought.
I have no clue. I really don't. But there must be something.
Certainly a big name, isn't it? I mean, we might as well stop the recording now, I think. I don't think we're going to beat that one, are we? No, it's amazing. It really is. So, yeah, I mean, that must really sort of spur you on to want to do more and more investigations then when you get that sort of result.
It does. Because, like I say, we've investigated that building 2 or 3 times now, and every time we've got somebody different, because there was thousands of people worked there.
Yeah,
I mean, it wasn't just that one building. The whole industrial estate was undercover. It was all hidden. It had trains going in, trains coming out. Nobody knew where it was. Tried bombing it, but they didn't actually know where it was. But people lost their lives in there.
Yeah.
You know, they were dealing with explosions. Mm. One explosion happened in May 1945. 8 people died. Mm. 21 people were really badly injured. And people don't realise, and they weren't just, I know they were called the Aycliffe Angels, but they weren't just ladies, there were men there as well, mm. who weren't fit enough to go to war, but would work in the munitions factories. And there's so many, it's like a layer of an onion. Every time we go, we get somebody else. You know, we find something else. Last time, the time before, we all heard a man whistle, just whistling his happy tune. Mm. And luckily that was caught on recordings. And we said at the time, did you hear that? And they were like, was that not you? No, it wasn't me. Was that not you? No, it wasn't me. And it's all on recordings, but it was a man. So,
obviously a lot of residual emotional energy there, isn't there? We visit places that you can pick things up. I mean, obviously, you're obviously very adept at picking things up when you go somewhere. But a lot of it is to do with the emotion that still sort of somehow attaches itself to an area, especially if there's been, you know, people unfortunately dying in accidents and stuff like that. So that's probably why it's such an active place.
Yeah, I know. And I just think it's a chance I've tried to do research, and yes, I can do a little bit, but because it was so secretive, you can't really go through the newspaper archives because nothing was printed. Mm. They didn't want anybody to know where it was. There's really nothing, not much.
Yeah.
I think it's a way of them telling their story as well, because when I share things, people have come to me and said, actually, my gran worked there or my auntie worked there. And then they tell me things. You know, like one person said to me, a relation of theirs started working there. And her job was actually to test the hand grenades.
Wow. But
she pulled the pin and she threw it too quickly, and they made her pick it up and throw it again.
Oh, Lord.
And for the first day on the job. I mean, it's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, hell's teeth.
Absolutely shocking, isn't it, really?
I know. And then when the factory closed and the war ended, they didn't really get so much as a thank you.
No.
It was just they were out of a job. And it's it wouldn't happen now, but it did then.
Well,
I think they just like to give us their voice and tell their story.
Because it's all been hushed up, hasn't it? And and nothing was recorded at the time, because obviously they were conscious of the Germans finding out exactly where it was, weren't they? So... and of course, the East Coast got quite heavily bombed, didn't it? I mean, Newcastle got heavily bombed, didn't it, in the Second World War?
Yeah. And Hartlepool and all of those places.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah, and Hull and places like that. So, which I know is a bit further south. No, that's really interesting. You must have felt quite amazed when you came away from there.
You sometimes come away and think, you just shake your head and you just think, you know what, when people hear this, they're going to think we're absolutely nuts. And I don't blame them. But some you do, don't you? Because
Yes, you do.
I think people go looking for famous people. That wasn't the case at all. And if you're going to go looking for a famous person, and this is no disrespect to Edith Piaf, but would you go looking for Edith Piaf?
Probably not.
Do you know what I mean? Like people would go for the Cray twins or, you know, all of that. But
Yeah.
that,
Dick Durbin.
not us,
You
but
know,
hey,
like that.
it
Wow.
was lovely to talk to
That's
her.
amazing.
It
So
really was.
are you going back there again at any point in the near
I
future?
would imagine so, yeah. I mean, we try not to overdo places, but because our groups are very small, we only take 10 people with us. We like intimate. I'm not into one of them that rocks up in a busload of people. If people want to have a, and we can't guarantee they're going to have an experience, but you've got more chance of having an experience if
Yeah.
it's intimate.
Yeah.
And I think that spirit likes to work with you as well on a smaller group. And they'll only show you what people like to know, because sometimes we have a very quiet night. And I always think, is it because somebody's not quite ready yet to experience? You know, they only show you what I think they think you can handle.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have, I mean, the table was dancing and everything, don't get us wrong, but, and we did have tap responses that was going off, and the REM pod was going off, and the cat balls were flashing all over the place. But we didn't see full-bodied apparitions or anything because that's few and far between. But
Yeah.
Bev's really, really good at taking photos. So with a full-spectrum camera, she just knows where to point. I know that, and she doesn't download her own photos because she's like me, she's technophobe. She did it once and she wiped the lot. So we didn't even see what she'd got.
Oh
So
dear.
now she takes the photos and she gives it to me, and then I upload them. And there's always 20, 30 with something on that's unexplained. Always. And I don't just mean orbs, because, you know, that's the whole debate about orbs. I
Yeah.
mean, you know, full on faces and full
Right.
on lights. And, but yeah, I think we just work really well as a team. But I think after so long, you kind of do. They put you through the paces, don't they? They make you work for it. They give you a little snippet and then makes you want to go back for more. And then you try a little bit harder and you put that little bit effort in, and then it snowballs, I think.
So
I reckon.
do you have a website or a
Do
Facebook?
you know what? I don't.
No.
The reason I don't, I did, I kept forgetting to update it. I kept even forgetting to go on it. So I don't now. So literally, it's just through social media. It's just through the Facebook
Right.
page. We've got Instagram. We've got a YouTube channel, which has got thousands of videos on there.
Okay.
And
Well, we'll come to that
every
later.
message, anybody ever messages me, it's me. It genuinely is me that answers.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get on to you how to get in contact with you later on then. So, I believe you did an investigation. It'd be a while ago now, but I believe you did an investigation in my neck of the woods, Pendle Hill.
Yeah, I did. It was back in 2021. It
Blimey.
was all after the COVID and everything. And we decided we were coming down to Pendle. And I booked a tour guide. I did that wrong, actually, because I shouldn't have booked a tour guide, but I wanted somebody to show us where to go because we're northeast lasses. I've never been to Pendle. I didn't want to be lost on Pendle Hill.
No.
So we just thought we'd book a tour guide. And we started at Clitheroe Castle.
Right, okay, yeah.
That's where we went. And I didn't realise that the guy would tell us all of the history. I didn't want that because, as an investigator, we wanted to see what we could catch. Anyway, he was lovely. The history was great. And we caught a photo of a man walking down from Clitheroe Castle, again on the full spectrum camera. And it went in the newspapers and everything, this one.
Okay.
I don't know who he was. He definitely wasn't us, because I'm really careful when I'm taking photos that I don't catch the public. I'm really wary of that. And there was nobody around. So we went there first. And Clitheroe Castle is lovely. It's beautiful. We were picking up soldiers looking at us. We got some photos of people watching us from part of the castle. And then our guide took us up to Pendle Hill, where he believed Malkin Tower was.
Right,
I
okay.
don't. Do you know where that is, or
Yeah.
where it's supposed to be?
Well, nobody really knows where it is.
Oh, well, this guy took us where it's supposed to be. I wouldn't know. It
Right.
was just on a hill in the middle of nowhere. And as he was telling us the little bit of the tale about that place, he was telling us about a group that he'd had, and somebody had thrown a tooth at them, and the tooth hit them on the shoulder.
Okay.
And they found the tooth on the floor. And as he was telling us the tale, something hit me on the shoulder. And we couldn't find it. So I don't know if somebody had thrown a tooth or not. I don't know. But then that guide left us. So we were actually on Pendle on our own in the dark.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And it was the spookiest place I think I've ever been.
Yeah, well, it's very windswept and it's very autumn. And
I don't know whether it's because you know of it, the history.
I think you build it up, yeah.
You build it up, and it was creepy, and it was dead dark, and we were somewhere near, you know, again. We went to like a ledge that looked like a bit of a quarry. I don't know whether you'll know where that is.
Yeah.
And we put the portal on and we did all of them things. And we did get some really, really good results from the portal.
Mm.
We picked up on a plane crash, which I didn't know there was a plane crash on Pendle Hill till afterwards.
Right, okay.
And the portal, I'm trying to think what it said. It did say tooth. It did say about a priest. And it mentioned Alice. I mean, I don't know whether that was Alice Nutter or not.
Hmm.
It mentioned a dog. It mentioned a Richard. I can't remember what else it said, but it was just... And at this point, we hadn't done any kind of research. I mean, I knew the Pendle witches were, you know, witches.
Yeah.
But we didn't know about any history. So that was quite interesting about the dog, because there's that devil dog, isn't there? It's supposed to be a devil dog. Richard out.
Yeah, it could be a couple of things actually, that, because one of the women involved in the Pendle Witches said that the devil used to come to her as her familiar, as a black dog.
Ah, so, well, it mentioned the dog. I mean, the recordings are all on YouTube as well.
Yeah,
we heard a child talk and saying she needed help. I mean, again, that could be anybody, I suppose.
Mm.
It said Grace is dead. And it said hidden tooth. So I don't know what the tooth thing is, but the portal definitely said hidden tooth. I don't know. Did they bury teeth? I don't know.
They used to dig teeth up.
Did they?
Allegedly, they used to dig. Again, I mean, you've got to look at 400 years of folklore, you know, with this. But allegedly, Demdike, who was one of the matriarch of one of the families, used to dig bodies up, dead bodies, graves, to use the bones and the teeth and whatever they could find in black magic rituals.
Yeah, but that makes sense, it was.
But again, as I say, there's no actual evidence of that. It's just what's been passed down through, you know, fireside tales over the last 400 years.
Yeah, I mean, we were meant to come back down, but we just didn't get round to it. And I really do want to come back down, because I think we just scratched the surface, really. I would do things slightly differently. I would go myself. I would think you could maybe join us if we ever come down that way.
I'd quite happily show you around. I'd quite happily be an unofficial guide. Yeah, absolutely.
Would you?
Yeah, of course I would. Yeah, absolutely.
Because, yeah, there's so much. It was great, but we were a little bit worried about being lost in the dark, so we maybe keep it a bit shorter than we possibly would.
Yeah, I mean, it's for anybody who's thinking of going to Pendle Hill, and I wouldn't try and put anybody off actually going up the hill. But there's a few things to bear in mind. One is that you know, the families that were involved in the Pendle Witch Trials didn't live on the top of Pendle Hill, because you wouldn't. It's just far too windswept. It's far too bleak. It's 2,000 feet above sea level. If you don't know where you are, it's not a good idea to be up there in the dark. That's.
No. I mean, we weren't at the top.
No.
We were just on some kind of road.
Yeah.
And then we went walking so far, but even so.
Yeah,
you
I mean,
know, when you're
the weather can change. Yeah, the weather can change quite quickly up there.
Yeah,
you know, the mist can descend, and you can suddenly find yourself being quite disorientated. And unfortunately, you know, there are a lot of people who come to the area, and they do wander off up Pendle Hill. I mean, there are designated tracks. There is a path up the shoulder, the very steep side of the hill, which I walked up myself in broad daylight and in good weather, and I was absolutely knackered when I got to the top. So you wouldn't want to do
You're
it.
You're not selling me it.
you wouldn't want to do it in bad weather or in the dark, you know. So you know, leaving people in an area like that they're unfamiliar with is probably not the best thing to do. But as I say, I mean, I wouldn't discourage anybody from coming, but you just have to be prepared. You know, it is quite a windswept, quite a bleak place.
It is, and we don't scare easy. It wasn't like we were going to, you know, be attacked by some spirit or anything. It was just really, it got dark really quickly, and you just think, you know what, we could be lost all night here.
Yeah,
it was just that kind of feeling. Let's just go.
Yeah,
let's just cut it short. Let's just go. I would have liked to have gone earlier. I don't suppose you even have to be in the dark.
No,
you know, to get the spirit box out or try and communicate or whatever. It doesn't have to be dark.
No, absolutely.
But it just was, and it was like I say, I'm too old to be lost on any kind of hill. But yes, we will go down. We've all spoke about it and said we would really like to go back.
Well, there are places that you can visit where there are actual proper links to the Pendle Witches. So villages sort of like Newchurch and Roughley and places like that are the villages around the sort of the foot of Pendle Hill, which is where obviously people lived. They didn't live up on the top of the hill, because as you know, it's just you live down in the valleys where it's more sheltered. So there are links, you know, to places like Roughley, Paddyham, where they had the initial investigations at Reed Hall. So there are lots and lots of places that you can visit that have really good strong links to the Pendle Witches. And probably one of the best places to go actually is Lancaster Castle.
I know, I've messaged them a few times and just never been able to go.
I'm not sure whether
I'm a big believer if it's meant to happen, it will.
Yeah.
Do you know,
yeah. I mean, you can go there as a sort of paying member of the public, and you can go around, because it is still a working court. So and part of the castle is a prison. So you don't have access to all of Lancaster Castle. So you will be going round with guides, you know, who can only take you in certain parts of the castle. But they'll show you where the Pendle Witches were held prior to the trial. They'll take you into the courtroom where the trials took place. You know, so that's and then obviously, you know, they were convicted at Lancaster. So it is an interesting place to go if you want to get that sort of angle of the story.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind visiting there. We could maybe pop down there and do the whole thing together.
Yeah, and Lancaster's a really nice town to visit anyway. So what other favourite investigations of yours have you done then? Let's move away from Pendle Hill and witches. And what's the ones that really sort of stick in your mind over the years?
Well, I like anything to do with the war, you know, army bases, things like that. They're my favourite. I mean, to be honest with you, I've got lots of favourites. But we go, you've probably heard about it, because again, this is a regular one with paranormal people, but the North East Air, Land, Sea Museum. At Seaham, it was the RAF Usworth, and it was also Sunderland Airport many years ago. And it's aircraft hangars, and it's full of military vehicles and aeroplanes and everything like that. It was on Most Haunted many years ago. Okay. And I just love that as well. It's just the atmosphere of, you know, you take it all in, that what these people went through. You know, and how hard things were back then. So that we're going back there a couple of times this year. Next week we are returning to an old brothel. I quite like a brothel or two. This is opposite Durham Prison, and it was a 16th century brothel, but it was where it's called, used to get a nickname of the Hangman's Pub.
Okay.
So it's the Dun Tow, and it's where the hangmen used to go and get drunk before hanging people at the prison.
Oh, dear.
So that's really good. We've been invited back there. We've been numerous times, but not for a good few years. But the landlady contacted us and said, can you come back? Because things are kicking off again. Glasses are sliding off tables. And so, and it's haunted by children. Last time we were there, we put a Victorian doll upstairs on a stand and it flung it off. But it didn't just fling it off after we just left, because luckily I caught it on CCTV. It was a good 30 minutes after I'd set it up, and a strange light came out of the wall, past the doll, and then the doll went, and then it disappeared through the wall again. So we're going back there. So again, that's a fascinating story, because you've got the working girls, you've got the children that they had, you've got the hangmen. You tend to get communication from people who were at Durham Prison, and right. You can imagine the people that have been at Durham Prison.
Yeah.
and it's just fascinating.
What sort of things happened when you were there then, apart from the doll? What other things happened?
Well, we tend to have caught things on film there and on camera, you know, like full spectrum again.
Yeah.
We caught a man last time, really clear. I took a thermal imaging camera into the loft where this guy tends to hide from us. He was a bit of a bully. He ran the brothel. He's a bit of a thug. And he doesn't like me because I stand up to him. So he tries to shout down at me and I won't have it. And he swears a lot. And he was cowering in the corner last time and I caught him on the thermal imaging. You can see him. He's got a hood up. He's just hiding out the way.
Okay.
But the ladies of the night come and talk to us and tell us, you know, the babies they've lost or the backstreet abortions that they've had to have. It's just their story.
Yeah.
You know, just telling us their story. Because, I mean, Durham, I don't know whether you've ever been to Durham.
I have actually, just once.
It's lovely, isn't it? It's full of really old buildings. We've done the Shakespeare Tavern. That's the oldest pub. It's on the way up to the cathedral. That was a brothel as well.
Okay.
So obviously Durham had its fair share of brothels.
I was going to say, there's a bit of a theme coming out here.
There is a theme. And we get followed by prostitutes everywhere. I mean, we've even done the Ripper. We've been to Whitechapel. We've done the Ripper sites.
Okay.
That was a great experience. But this year, what have we got? We've got, we're going back to the North East Air Museum. That's a firm favourite. We're going to Vane Tempest, which was a DLI, Durham Light Infantry Militia Barracks. We're going back there. We're going back to Mainsforth Community Centre, where it all started for us, our very first investigation. We are going back there just to see what we can pick up and see if we can get anything different.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I can't really remember what we got the time before because my memory's terrible. So, you know, because I'm getting on a bit now. it's just a fascinating place. And that place is weird. We took a lady with us, Sheila, and she said, do you know, I really enjoy coming on your investigations, but nothing really happens to me. Well, she should have kept her mouth shut, because that night we did a seance. And she was taken over, believe it or not.
Right.
The spirit got really close and she had to leave the circle, and she was in the toilet, in the haunted toilet in the dark on her own, because she'd rather be in there than in the seance. So you've got to be really careful what you wish for.
So what happened then with that? What
she just felt like somebody was hugging her really, really tight. Now, seances are weird. Again, we used to try to do seances, and it's only when people have been doing these things for years or practiced in a church or, you know, getting on a little bit and they've done this all their lives, that they give you hints and tips. And then that's what this lady did with us. And ever since then, the seances have got better and better. And now we've started putting red light, you know, like transmediumship red light in the seance, because we find that people's faces change quite a bit in seance. And especially me, I grow a full on beard. I've got photographic evidence of me with a full-on beard, and I look like I'm auditioning for The Greatest Showman. But when people see it with their own eyes, it's like, blimey. But yes, getting back to Sheila, she felt like somebody had bear-hugged her. She couldn't breathe. She was coming out with really random things. She was getting names, and I was saying, just give us them, and she was giving us them and giving us dates and things. And then she said, Elaine, I'm going to have to leave. I'm going to have to leave this. I can't. You know, I can't stand this any longer.
Mm.
And with a seance, you don't break the circle. So we did all of that, letting her leave without breaking the circle of hands.
Mm.
And then all the time we were in the seance and a shouting to make sure Sheila was okay in the toilet where she was trying to be sick.
Oh, dear.
I know. But But she was fine. Nobody was harmed in the making.
So was this the physical effect then of what had happened to her?
Yeah, and we still laugh about it now. And I mean, it wasn't funny because I even said, "Oh my God, how are we going to explain to her husband that she's died?" You know, but we were joking. But we obviously made sure that she was all right. We're all Reiki practitioners. We all make sure everybody feels fine before we close anything down or, you know, do the closing prayer. Nobody leaves with anything. We make sure everybody's right. We have full public liability insurance. We've been doing it for an awful long time. But she just said, "Nothing ever happens to me." And now we always say to her, "Sheila, careful what you wish for." And she'll say, "Yeah, no."
Yeah, be careful what you say. So what? You're not getting away with the beard thing. What's beard?
Well, I've met a few. Okay. And he has a full-on beard.
Right.
And I met, this is again, when I was Reiki attuned, I met my guide, or this guide. So I believe he is my healing guide, because I believe you have different guides for different things. And it tends to be when we do a seance, and honestly, I can send you the photo and you wouldn't believe it, and it's actually caught on film as well. I have a full-on black beard on at least two occasions.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, it happens to some of the other parts. Shana does transmediumship. Her face changes when she's communicating with spirit and people see it. We went to the George at Piercebridge, which has links to Dick Turpin. He hid in one of the tunnels there. And he's a bit of a potty mouth, is Richard, because we've spoken to him a few times. He swears a lot. And one of the ladies that had never been with us before, we were doing a seance, and her face changed, and she looked like she had a scar down her face. And it just, if you do it right, it's really, really good evidence. But I would say, if you don't know what you're doing, just please be careful, because people they can take really poorly.
Yeah, yeah, and because they can also get things attached to as come, well.
Yeah, you're asking spirit to come really, really close to you, and to show you things in whatever they see, and if that's, they can get really, really close. So I'm always, sometimes I don't even join. Sometimes I stay out and I watch just to make sure everybody's fine.
Yeah.
Just so I can keep an eye on it, you know, depending where we are.
Yeah. You keep chucking names at me here.
Go on.
Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
Hang on a minute. Dick Turpin. So what?
Yeah, Dick Turpin.
So go on. So what? You said he was a bit of a potty mouth, old.
Oh, he's a potty mouth. The first time we spoke to, well, we did a ghost walk around York. And yeah, Richard Turpin's, Richard Turpin's grave is at York, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So, we've been to the George, and I knew that he was supposed to be there, but you just don't know if it's folklore, do you? Nobody knows for definite. I mean, the George at Piercebridge has the story of the grandfather's clock. So you know that song, "My Grandfather's Clock is Too Big for the Shelf." And it's, you know, that one. Well, that's based on that hotel, the George at Piercebridge. And the clock, it's not the original grandfather's clock. That's long gone. But there is a grandfather's clock there. Now, next to the grandfather's clock is a hidden tunnel. So while we were there, and the portal, the spirit box was swearing and effing and jeffing, I was asking the questions, and it turned out that it was Dick Turpin. So he was talking to us, and he told us he did hide in there, and he was an outlaw, and he this, that, and the other. And if you just ask them questions, he's just a person.
Yeah,
but he is sweary. He's a very sweary guy.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how
Would that not be, I mean, obviously he was, what was he? He was he 18th century?
Yeah, and so, I'd even Googled if people swore back then.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask, I mean, is that how he would have spoken?
Well, they did swear. I don't know whether he did. I mean, he wasn't a very nice character. He's supposed to be painted as this, you know, gorgeous hero, wasn't he?
Wasn't he, to begin with?
Yeah, and didn't he rape somebody? You know, he's not a very nice character. Anyway, no. I asked him about his grave, and I said, "Are you buried in that churchyard at York?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "Is it where your gravestone is?" And he said, "No." He said, "He's not buried there." But that is the folklore, isn't it? They were trying to put grave robbers off.
And plus, they tended to bury him in unmarked graves, didn't they? Because, you know, these these sort of people. They didn't want them to become sort of, you know, martyrs or
So that's what he said, and he just confirmed that yes, he's there, but that no, that's not his gravestone. Oh. It is his gravestone, but that's not where he's buried.
That's not where he's buried, yeah.
No. So but yes,
how did you feel about that then, talking to somebody of such historical note?
But you just, you know what, you kind of think, and it's really daft, and you know what it's like. You can get the clearest photo and catch anything. Somebody always saying to you, fake, aren't they? That's fake. Yeah. Yeah. Doctored that. That's not true. So then I just start and then think, well, I can't share that. How can I share that I've spoken to Dick Turpin? Because you're always wary of, you're going to get slated for that. Yeah. You're going to get absolutely slated. And you do. Yeah. Unfortunately, you do. And I get it. There are lots of fakes. Mm. You know, there are. But I don't gain anything from that. This isn't my job. I work at a school. We all work. This is a hobby. And it's an expensive hobby. And when you first start these things, you do think, you know what, I'm going to make a mint from this. I'm going to be the biggest international, and I don't like the word ghost hunter, but I'll say it because I don't like it. No. And I'm going to be famous, and I'm going to this, that, and the other. No, you're not. It's the most expensive hobby that you'll ever have. Mm. You book venues, you pay a fortune because people think paranormal and think I'm going to charge you whatever they want. Yeah. For these venues, and then if you don't fill them and cover that cost, you have to pay for it.
Then you're losing yourself, yeah.
And you're losing it. And then, like you say, you get this evidence and you think, this is really, I mean, like Edith Piaf, fabulous. I was chuffed a bit, but then in my back of my mind, I'm thinking, they are going to think you're a crank. They're going to think that you've just made it up. And that's, and unfortunately, that's the way it is.
Mm.
Isn't it?
It is, unfortunately.
There's millions of paranormal groups out there. Millions of them, and it should be fun. You know, it's not going to be a, I mean, don't get us wrong, I know people do make a business from it.
Yeah.
But if you're going to make a business from it, you're going to be out nearly every night. You're going to be filling places. You're not going to be recording it to catch anything. And what's the point in investigating somewhere if you're not going to try and catch evidence on film? And then you can't do it every night and have all of them people there and then watch that footage. It's just then a money-making thing, isn't it? You're just filling
it is.
Doing the scare factor, leaving.
Exactly, yeah. Things are going to happen because you've got people paying money to go along to somewhere and they're going to expect that something freaky is going to happen. And if it doesn't, then they'll just move on to another group. They'll go and pay the money to another group.
They will. And do you know something? You know, our investigations aren't about scaring people. Mm. Quite the opposite. I want people to come along with us because you do build it up to something, don't you? You think you're going to get possessed like The Exorcist and you're going to need a priest, don't you? And then by the time they've been with us, and I always say, you know, I'm going to try and get this table to move. I'm going to try and get it to tip. Now, if I was sat here and that table tipped itself, I'd die. But because you're asking it and you're doing it in a really respectful way, and when it actually happens, you're buzzing because you're not scared. It's absolutely fascinating. I mean, I've had people check my tables for wires and all sorts. There's nothing fancy about my tables. And then they build up from that. And then I don't want anybody to go home feeling like fear. Mm. The same as if we investigate a building and they're scared because they've got a ghost. By the time we've been, they actually feel better about it because they know who the spirit is and they know their name. And they know what they wanted and they know their history. And it's somebody looking for a son they lost, or it's a baby looking for its mum. And then it takes on a whole different thing. And then they kind of embrace it. And then nobody wants, they're not saying, I want it cleansed. They're like, oh no. And then they leave toys.
Yeah.
You just want to understand it. And if they have got a haunting where it gets quite difficult, usually if you negotiate and you say, look, just don't be around when so and so's in the house, you know. You just don't cross each other's paths, don't scare. And then it tends to, that works as well. You don't have to go in guns blazing and, you know, get a priest in. And so
have you ever encountered a really malicious spirit, a poltergeist, for instance, one that is very physical?
Mm, I have. Not often, but I have. And I, you'll know the house. It's a Pontefract.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So we hired said house, I won't say, for advertising purposes. And it was my husband that said, if this is supposed to be Britain's most haunted house, even if it isn't, as a paranormal investigator, you can't not go.
No.
So I paid the money, which stuck in my throat a little bit, because it's not cheap.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And we went, and I pulled up and I thought, well, this is going to be rubbish, and like, you know, like properly chuntering to yourself, thinking, what a waste of time this is going to be. And I was setting up the CCTV, and I walked up the stairs, and something punched me in the stomach. Right. And it punched me that hard, I bent double.
Okay.
Now, I know that people have said about this house that, oh, it's fake, and it's this, and it's that.
Yeah.
Maybe things aren't active like it was for us, because I've been twice. But that very first time, I was punched, and I took back everything disrespectful that I'd said, because they obviously showed me who was boss.
Mm.
And I took that investigation very, very serious that night. And that night, on CCTV, we caught a full-bodied apparition walking across the living room.
Right.
And that was featured on TV. It was featured on Unexplained, caught on camera. But I didn't even know, because when you hire the house, they have the rights to footage.
Oh, right, okay.
So I didn't even know until it was on. And then I thought, and somebody rang me up and said, you do know your footage is on the TV. I didn't know about it. Now, in their defence, and I did contact them and complain a little bit, and they did give me it cheaper on our second return. And the second return wasn't as good as the first. So I think it was, they'd given us everything that first time, and then they must have thought, oh, what are you doing back here? As if we didn't give you enough the first time.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, I still enjoyed it. It was still good, but it wasn't on that level.
I mean, I suppose if you were the entity or an entity that had some sort of consciousness and you were attached to this place.
Yeah.
I can quite understand how the spirit will get quite peeved with all that's going on.
Somebody's there every single night.
Sounds like a cash cow.
Yeah. Well, it is because it's fully booked years in advance.
Yeah.
And it's every night. And I don't know whether that was what paved me when I booked it. You know, when you just think, oh, you know, this really is, it's going to be a waste of time. You know, it's just something new there. And whether somebody in the spirit world thought, well, she's not very excited about being here, so let's just punch her. But it got my attention. But I honestly, when I pulled up, I thought, oh, what a waste of time. Just a waste of time. We're going to be here for hours and hours, and it's just a waste of time. And then literally within 10, 15 minutes, I didn't even go to the toilet on my own after that.
I can imagine. So
because if something can physically hurt you like that, blimey.
Well, I've heard of that before. I spoke to a lady who I did a podcast with quite a while ago now, whose husband had a similar experience where he was pushed down some stairs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that physical aspect of some of these hauntings aren't they are rare, aren't they? But they're not that rare. They do happen.
They definitely do happen. That's why I was saying about being careful in a seance.
Yeah.
Because it can happen. The other time I was really scared, it was when we'd first started off. And when I think now, we were very ignorant. And there's places we shouldn't have been when we'd just been new. You know, we did really build up going to community centres and things like that, you know, kind of getting to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And then I booked the Schooner Hotel at Alnmouth, which is a smuggler's place. And it had been on the TV, and I thought, oh, we can do that. And we went in a bedroom, and I can't remember what number it was, but it was the bedroom where it's the most haunted, and he massacred his family, this guy.
Right, okay.
And so it's not got a great, you know, let's all go and stay in a place where someone bumped off his whole family.
Yeah.
And I was in there, and something had me by the throat, and I could feel his fingers and his thumb on my throat. And then I had to step out. That quite worried me a bit, because that had been my very first experience with something actually touching me like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, since then, I've been groped and everything, you know, and so you kind of know. But back then, when I was a rookie.
Yeah. Don't tell me Dick Turpin was involved in that, please.
Well, no, you know, I've just said I go to brothels. When I went to Shakespeare Tavern at Durham, and that was a brothel, and I was in the cellar. You should see it on film. I mean, it's night vision. He had more hands than an octopus, and I'm jumping around all over. He was nipping me backside. He was doing all sorts, and you just tell him to get off, don't you? You know, but back then, you know, if anybody's young and starts doing these things, you've got to be really, really careful.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you're quite right. And I think a lot of people don't realise just how dangerous it can be, do they? You know, because they see it all on TV, don't they? And it's all very sexy and it's all very glamorous and it's all very, you know, Discovery TV or whatever, all these ghost hunting programmes are on. And it's very sanitised, isn't it? You know, it's all for entertainment, isn't it? So...
It is for entertainment, and you know what it's like. You sit for hours and hours and hours trying to get things to happen.
Yeah, you know
what I mean? And like I say, I have been touched. I mean, I've come up with a demons. I don't know whether I use that word, but I have dealt with things that people have left behind by doing things that they shouldn't with Ouija boards and things and not knowing how to close things down. And you know, we've dealt with things like that where we've had to try to cleanse things, but that's not what we do. I don't go looking for, and that's not me saying I don't want to help people, because it's not that at all. But when I go to investigate places, I don't want to go for the, oh, do you know it's got a demon? No, I don't really want to go and speak to a demon. I'd rather go and speak to Edith Piaf.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I just, somebody's lighthearted, somebody's grand, somebody, or somebody linked with the, because we've done links with Shildon Railway, and I've spoken to Timothy Hackworth, you know, and these famous people that's been in the railway. I've been to the first ever railway ticket office, you know, all these lovely places that people don't really know that the history of them. You know, I live at Bishop Auckland. Stan Laurel went to school where I went to school. His dad had a theatre at Bishop Auckland. So I've spoken to Stan Laurel's dad and mum and him.
Okay.
And I know there's another... I'm chucking names at you now, Anna.
I'm scribbling names down as you're telling me.
But yeah, and he's just a normal guy telling me... He told me details that I didn't even know until I Googled them. And then I thought, this is Stan Laurel.
So this was Stan Laurel. Amazing.
I know. I've just released a book today, actually.
Okay.
I'll use you for a bit of a plug. I've just released today a book called The Haunting History of Bishop Auckland. And that's to do with Stan Laurel and, you know, all of that. And we had a workhouse it's only when you write a book about your history that you think it's so sad. Like, there's a lot of, you know, neglect, like, people leaving the kids to starve, and somebody had left a baby in a cupboard, and it wasn't until that person died that they discovered the remains of a child in a cupboard in Bishop Auckland. And it's just, and everyone likes that creepy aspect, but Bishop as a town is, you know, the Bishop of Durham lives at Auckland Castle,
right?
He doesn't now.
I never put two and two together with that.
Yeah, so we've got Auckland Castle, so it's the Bishop of Durham, so obviously Durham Cathedral and the land of the Prince Bishops and all of that. It's based on Bishop Auckland, so it's steeped in history and it's 2 miles from where I live. And I just tend to do ghost walks where people can come along and I do a little bit of a history tour and tell them about it. And then I use the equipment to see if people will come through and talk, and good old Stan Laurel sometimes pops up. You just don't know.
Amazing. I was going to ask you about the Jack the Ripper thing, but I think we'll leave that for another podcast, because I've got a funny feeling we've still got a lot of ground to cover.
Yes, it's a long investigation, Jack the Ripper.
I can imagine. So your book, where can people find your book?
It's just been released on Amazon.
Okay.
So if they look on, I've got a lot of books on Amazon. It's under E.P. Kelly.
Okay.
So there is a Jack the Ripper book. I've got a Mary Ann Cotton book. She's a serial killer from here. Dealt a few times with Mrs. Cotton, as I call her. So yeah, that's my new one, The Haunting History of Bishop Auckland, just released. It's 500 pages long. It's a big read, but it does have spirit photography in it, and it does have I've done research, so it's got like articles and the census and things like that. So well, if you like the paranormal things,
if you can send me a link, I'll put it in the description for the podcast.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
Send me a link to your Amazon page with all your your books on. Now, you've also got a YouTube channel as well.
Yeah, I have. It's just Spectre Detectors. Okay. I think it's Spectre Detectors 5166. Okay. But it's on, you know, I've got Spectre Detectors Facebook page and all of that, and all the links are on there. Okay. But yes, every single thing, as long as it's not private, because obviously sometimes when we do investigations, people's family members come through, and I'll never, ever share that.
No.
But everything else, the whole Dick Turpin, the whole Jack the Ripper, they're all on there.
Wow.
If people want to sit and spend hours and hours going through it.
Well, that's my bedtime entertainment then, I think, tonight when I've gone to bed, because I like to troll through YouTube when I'm in bed. So I will definitely have a look for that. So people can just contact you through any of those channels.
Yes, yeah. Or my email address is spectredetectors@yahoo.co.uk. If anybody knows anything about Edith Piaf, that would be great.
Yeah.
Because I don't. I mean, I obviously know who she is, but you know, if anybody's listening and think, actually, I know about that, and yes, she did especially go to the UK. Or,
yeah. The link to where you invested. Yeah.
If not, she's just seen an opportunity and popped in, and I don't blame her. Well, she just obviously wanted to hear her own songs being played, and
you certainly seem to hobnob with some of the big names of history, don't you? Oh, it's been absolutely, it's been amazing talking to you. It really has. I've been wanting to chat with you for a while, Elaine, and we're going to have to do this again sometime, because I've just got that feeling that there's so much more you could tell me, and it's been absolutely amazing, the stories that you've told me today. So thank you for that. I really do, really, really do appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. I'd love to come back on. You know, I've got 12 years of stories. We can go on and on and on.
Well, I will definitely have you back on. Thank you again for coming on this episode. And hopefully people will enjoy listening to it as much as I've enjoyed listening to you, because you've been a fascinating guest. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. Take care. Thank you.
You too.
You can visit my website at www.craigbryant.co.uk. Paranormal Pendle will return, and remember to keep watching the shadows.